Begin the current daf in Sechtes Chul and Daf Lamed Ches. Begin on the bottom of Lamed Zayin and Beis, two lines up in the bottom of the Yamed, where the Gemara continues a discussion of the Halacha of our Mishnah regarding Misukenis, an animal that's in danger of its life, which the Gemara had explained. If you try to stand it up and it can't stand up, then we're thinking that it's at the end of its life. Then we're not sure if when you slaughtered it, if it was still alive or not. That's when the Halacha we had the Machlekes regarding what it has to show. Pirkas has to show some type of spasms to show that it was still alive at the end of the slaughtering and that it didn't die beforehand. Now on that theme, Ashkechinu Shmuel Tamida de Rav. Shmuel encountered the students of Rav. Amalahu, he said to them, Mayam Rav Bimusukanis, what did Rav say regarding to this halacha of an animal that's in danger at the end of its life? So Amalahu, they said to him, Hachem Rav, this is what Rav said as we continue the type of Lamed Chesam and Alf. Either one of these things, whether it be Gaya, where the animal screams as it's dying, or v'hetila rei, or if it releases waste matter, v'kishkasha ba'azna, or if it wags its ear, hareza pirkus, any one of these things are signs of pirkus, and they're valid to show that the animal was alive at the time of the slaughter. So Amalahu, Shmuel said to the students of Rav, Itzruchaleila Abba, Abba required, meaning referring to Rav, it was an honorific that Shmuel would say in regards to Rav, like, father, La Zuzi Aini, he requires that the animal has to wag to shake its ear, where that's a very large sign of vitality and of pirkus. He requires such a big sign. Says Shmuel, because I say it doesn't really need so much. Rather, call any pirkus that a musukenis is mefarchis, that she'ena dvarim, and the girsa is that Rashi has shamesa isa, that's not something that an animal does when it's dying. If it's already out of that category, that's already pirkus, as the Gemara is going to explain. As the Gemara asks, "My ninu dvarim shamesa isa." What's something that a dying animal does, which that's not sufficient? But anything beyond that, even less than what Rav was quoted as saying, of like this moaning or this type of releasing waste or having to shake its ear, that would be enough. So Amar Ravan says, "Lididim farshli minei demar Shmuel." To me, it was explained from the master Shmuel that what is the category of just what a dying animal does. Let's say the dying animal's hand was bent over and it stretched it out. So that's davish hamesa isa. That's something that a dying animal does. It's just in its last bit of life, as it's dying, it just stretches out its hand. But pshuta v'kafafa. But if let's say the hand was stretched out and it folds it over, pulls it back, that's dvarm she'ena mesa isa. That's not something that an animal does normally as its life is leaving it. And therefore, if the animal already does that, that's a sign of pirkus. That's a sign of vitality. That's a sign that the animal was alive, and that's enough. And you don't need to have, like Rav was quoted saying, as kishkasha ba'azna. Now, this all was talking about a behemoth daka. This is talking about by small livestock. And as the Gemara asks, well, my kamash balan. What exactly then is Shmuel teaching us, the way Rav Anan was saying over the tradition, Tanina? That was already said in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, Behema daka shepeshado yada belohechzira. If a small livestock, small animals, flock, sheep, goat, that if it stretched out its hand, but it didn't pull it back, that's psula. That's not valid, meaning by an animal that's in musukenis. She'ena elohitzas nefesh. That's what an animal does as it's dying. Now the inference is hachzir k'shera, but if it takes it back, it is going to be valid. So that's the exact halacha that Shmuel had told us, that if it's pshuta v'kufafa, that's something that she'ena mesa isa, and that would be valid. That halacha we already know from our Mishnah. Oh, says the Gemara, if we were only coming from the inference of mimas nitin of our Mishnah, and that's what we learned it out as you're being medayik, that oh, it's not valid when it just stretches out, but if we take it back, it would be valid. Havamina, I would have said, Davka de kaifa upashata vahadu kaifala. If you read the Mishnah, then I would have thought to say it's only if initially the animal, when it's being slaughtered, the dying animal, had its hand folded over, it stretched it out, and then again pulled it back. Ava pashuta, but if already in the beginning originally it was stretched out, v'kfafasa, and all it did was that it folded it back, loya, I would say that's not sufficient to be considered pirkus. And that's what Shmuel is teaching us from this tradition of Rav Anan, that where if it was already in the beginning stretched out and all it did was bend it back, that is enough of a sign of a pirkus. That's what's necessary for a behemah dakana. But in contrast to behemah gasa, there, even if it was bent over and all it did was stretch it out, that would be considered pirkus, because a large animal, for like a bull, they don't do that even in the dying features. But that's what Shmuel was disagreeing with Rav. He says you don't need to have kishkisha ba'asna. All you have to do is something that it doesn't normally do as it's dying, like by a small animal just stretching out its hand. If it already just pulls it back, and even more than what we would have known necessarily from the Mishnah, it doesn't even have to stretch it out and pull it back. Even if it was already stretched out and you pull it back, that's enough for pirkus to be a valid shchita on this musikanis. Now, actually, on this opinion of Rav, Meisve, the Gemara asks from the following Braisa. The Braisa says, Rabbi Yisi Emir, he said, HaYirmeo Emir, he said that Remeo would say, Goya b'shar shchita, which is the animal as it's dying, it gives out this shriek, this moan. If it does that during the slaughtering, ain't a pirkus. That's not a sign of a spasm of like vitality to say that it's alive and that it didn't die before the shechita. And Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yisi Amir Mishma, he says in the name of Rabbi Yisi, that afila hitila rei, even if it released waste matter, or if a kishkisha beznaba, or if it wags its tail, ain't a pirkus. That's not a sign of the spasm. It's not a sign of vitality to say that it was alive. And we're not going to know necessarily that it was kasher because of musikenis. We have to think that maybe it died before it was properly slaughtered. Now, so the Gemara asked on Rav on 2 points. Kasha Goya Goya. The first teaching of the Braisa that says Goya is not a simon is difficult on Rav, who the first word on this Amid said that is considered pirkus. And Kasha Rei Rei. We have the other halacha that says that waste matter is not considered a sign of vitality. That contradicts Rav also, who said that Hitila Rei is considered pirkus. Says the Gemara, Goya Goya like Kasha. First question regarding the moaning, the shrieking during the death. First of all, that's not difficulty. Why? Because, this that Rav said that Goya, this moaning, is pirkus, is considered a sign of vitality, is the Ave Kali. He was talking about where it had a thick, deep voice that was obviously coming from life, from vitality. That would be a sign of pirkus. Ha de Ami Kali. The Bryce was talking about where it was a weak moan. That's not necessarily a sign of vitality. Therefore, that wouldn't be considered as valid as pirkus, and therefore, that wouldn't be a kosher shechita. Now, so to Rei Rei Namilei Kasha, it's also not difficult regarding the releasing of waste matter. Because Khan B'Shei Seses, the Bryce is talking about where the waste matter just dropped out of the animal right there. That's not a sign of vitality, that's just a dead end, the waste matter came out. Khan B'Masrezes, Rav's talking about where the waste matter came flying out, that's a sign of vitality. Therefore, that's why Rav said that would be a valid pirkus. Now, the Gemara continues in these halachas. Amar Rav Chizda says, Pirkus Sha'amru. This that they said, like the halacha of a Mishnah, we disagree exactly what is pirkus, but this that we said, you have to have some of this type of spasm to show sign of vitality that the animal is alive, even though it's misukenis, and that it's at the end of life. So, says Rav Chizda, I heard that that's besoif shchita, that pirkus, that spasm has to be at the end of the slaughtering. And slaughtering takes time, you have to get through the neck, the two pipes. Says it has to be at the end of the slaughtering. And he says, and I'll explain. My besoif shchita, what is this that I heard that has to be at the end of the slaughtering? It means, it really means in the middle of the slaughtering. So then why is it called it? Why was the tradition that I heard that saying it was at the end of the slaughtering? That was lafuki tchila shchita. That was only coming to exclude that if the pirkus was in the beginning of the slaughtering, that since it didn't do any more spasms once it already reached the middle of the slaughtering, that there, deloy, that no, there, it's obviously did not have any vitality, and there it's going to be forbidden, because what it was doing in the beginning of slaughtering was just the leaving of the soul, but that wouldn't be valid. That's why it says Saif Shchita, but it doesn't really mean have to say that it's when the slaughtering is over. It could even be in the middle, but it can't just be in the beginning, because if it just spasms in the beginning, that's just the leaving of its life, and that wouldn't be a valid pirkus. Now, Amar Rav Chizda says, Menah Minilay, says, where do I know this? That this that I heard that has to be at the end of the slaughtering really means to say the middle of the slaughtering. It says Tetnan, I'll prove it from the halacha of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Behema Daka, small livestock, a small flock, the sheep, the goats, Shepshata Yada Veloich Zira. If let's say, here we're talking about at the end of its life when it's being slaughtered, that if it stretches out its hand and doesn't bring it back, so the Mishnah said, Psul, it's going to be invalid. So says Rav Chizda, Emas. When are we talking about that we're saying it stretched out its hand and didn't take it back, that we're saying it's invalid? If you're saying it's that when at the end, when slaughtering is already over, it has to continue going and living, meaning after we're slaughtered already, you think it's not going to be enough at the end of its life, when the slaughtering is over, just to stretch out its hand, that it doesn't require going and taking it back? And that is, Rav Chizda can't fathom that it, when the slaughtering is over, that it wouldn't be enough for Pirkus to just stretch out his hand. And that it would require, as it seems from the Halacha of the Mishnah, to not only stretch it out, but bring it back. So therefore he says it can't be that's talking about the end of the Shechita. Elav b'emtza Shechita, isn't it obviously talking about in the middle of the slaughtering? That's where we require Pirkus. And that's what we're saying, that, oh, if it just stretches out, that's not going to be enough. But if you stretch it out and bring it back, that is going to be enough. That's Halacha Pirkus. That we see, obviously, that's in the middle of Shechita. It's just when we call Saif, we mean not in the beginning. But you obviously don't need the Saif, as he's proving, because or else it wouldn't be requiring it to stretch it out and bring it back to. Which Amalei Rava. Rava disagrees with that premise. Says, no, lo'ilam b'saif shechita. Truth is, no, like the words of the Mishnah, meaning as we could even say that it's too much specifically as the tradition that Rav Chizda had heard, is at the end of the slaughtering. Now this that Rav Chizda was saying, after it's already slaughtered and already fully finished, do you think it has to stretch it out and take it back? Says Rava, yes. Sha'ani Aymer, says Rava, because I say, as we'll see his opinion later on, if it doesn't do this, which is the requirement of Pirkus, stretching out and bringing it back at the end of the slaughtering, be a Jewish and Neshmas and Netulehim and the Kaimachain, you obviously know that its life has left it before it was already finished, and therefore it's actually not going to be a valid Shechita, and it's going to be considered a Nevela. It was not properly slaughtered, it was already dead before it was finished. But that's Rabbah's contesting with the opinion of Rav Chizda, but that's what Rav Chizda says, that the Pirkus that we were describing in the Mishnah has to be Be'emsa Shechita. Doesn't need to be at the end, but for sure it's not going to help in the beginning. However, Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar, he says, no, Pirkus Amar, this that they said, that to validate the Shechita of the Mesukenes is with the spasms, is B'tchila Shechita. In other words, even if it spasms in the beginning of the slaughtering, that's sufficient. On that, Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, Menamin, he says, where do I know this from? Ditnan. He also brings a raya from our Mishnah. A different halacha. Amar Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon said, "Hashechet b'alayla." If someone slaughters at nighttime, now, well, he cannot tell necessarily with the simanim because it's nighttime. Ulamachar matzik salam aleim dam. But the next day he comes back and he finds that the walls are covered with blood. So ksheira, it's going to be valid. So although it was musukenes, but since the walls of the of where the neck of the animal was slaughtered, as we're going to shortly explain, are covered with blood. So you could know, obviously, Shazinka, that obviously that the animal was spurting out the blood, or Kamidus Rebbe Lazar, and this is valid like the opinion of Rebbe Lazar, who he says that Zinuk, that the blood spurting out, is a simon of Pirkus, it's a spasm, which shows that obviously the animal was alive when the slaughtering was done. Now, although again it was dark and you couldn't see at nighttime, you know obviously Zinuk happened. Now, V'amar Shmuel had clarified and explained that although the words sound like matzik salam lam dam, sounds like the walls of the house will cover blood, he says, no, kaisei be shchita shenin, as we're explaining, it means that the walls of the incision, of the slaughtering area, of the neck of the animal, was covered with blood. Now, the reason why we have to explain over here that the walls we're talking about are not the walls of the house, but rather the walls of the house of the neck, meaning of the slaughtering area, is because if it was literally the walls of the house, then tomorrow you would be able to figure out and discern if this spurting was in the beginning of the slaughtering or the middle of the slaughtering. Because if it would be in the beginning of the slaughtering, then you would find that the blood would have spurted very high up on the walls. And you obviously would be known, because it's coming from a lot of strength and vigor that the animal still has when it's just in the beginning of it being slaughtered. So it would be spurting very far. If you, however, found the spurt were lower down on the wall, then you would know that the spurt was from the middle of the slaughtering, where it doesn't have so much energy anymore to spurt very far. But that's why the Gemara is pointing out, now that Shmuel says that the walls that we're talking about in this halacha of Reb Shimon are not literally the walls of the house, rather talking about the walls of the neck of the animal where it was slaughtered, then we cannot discern if that spurting was in the beginning of the slaughtering or at the end of the slaughtering. And therefore, that's the proof that Rav Nachman Yitzchok comes to bring now. He says, "Iyamrit b'shleima, if you say that whenever the spasm is, even b'tchila shechita, like he's trying to prove, even in the beginning of the slaughtering, that would be considered as pirkus to validate the shechita, so shape. So that would be very good. We could understand this halacha of Reb Shimon the way Shmuel is explaining it. Where tomorrow we see that it's spurted, and therefore we know that there was pirkus in the previous night, because no matter when it happened, which it could have been even in the beginning of slaughtering, that's valid." But if you say like Rav Chizda, that requires at least in the middle of the slaughtering, who's to tell us tomorrow that the spurting that the animal had done in the previous night when you couldn't see because it was dark, that was in the middle of the slaughtering? You have to be concerned that maybe it happened in the beginning of the slaughtering, that that's when it spurted. Obviously, sort of Nachman Yitzchak, you see like me, that yeah, it's even valid, even if the pirkus was done, betchila shchita. Which the Gemara says, no, Vidilma, maybe, I would tell you that really all the other pirkusim, all these other spasms that we're describing as simanim, they're not considered pirkus, only if it's in the middle of the shchita, like Rav Chisda said, or maybe even as Ravat said, at the end of the slaughtering. But Shani Zinuk, this halacha that you bring from the Mishnah Reb Shimon of the spurting of the blood, I could tell you to Adif, that is a better sign of vitality, and therefore it's considered a bigger pirkus. And yeah, there, even if it happened only in the beginning of the slaughtering that it spurted, I could tell you that that's going to be valid, because obviously it has a lot of vitality, so even if in the beginning of slaughtering, it's still going to be alive till the end of the Shechita. But maybe, not like Rav Nachman Yitzchak, maybe regarding all the other pirkus and like pulling its hand back, that would not be valid in the beginning of Shechita, and that would require, again, either in the middle of the Shechita or at the end. And that the Gemara responds back, Umi Adif? Is that really so, that you're trying to disprove Rav Nachman Yitzchak by saying that the spurting is a stronger sign, and therefore maybe over there it works in the beginning of Shechita? But what's not? We learned in the Mishnah that Rabbi Elazar Aimer, he said, in one of the opinions of what's necessary as pirkus, he says, Daya im Zinka. Says, it's enough if it spurts. From using the words Daya, obviously it's a lesser type of a sign. So how can you say it's stronger? Says the Gemara, no, that's not a proof. I could tell you, Kalmud Rebbe Gamliel. Yeah, his words are going under Rebbe Gamliel. Rebbe Gamliel required for pirkus that it has to stretch out both the hand and the foot, both of them. So on that, Zinka is less. But for Adiv and Rabbanan, but I can tell you it's still stronger than that sign of pirkus of the Rabbanan that says you either have only the hand or the foot. And on that is what we say, that for the hand and the foot, meaning one or the other, like the Rabbanan, that maybe again has to be in the middle or at the end. But Zinka, which is stronger than that, that maybe could be in the beginning. That's not a right from Nachman Yitzchak, because that would only be by Zinuk. However, on that, this proves Amar Avin. He says no. Amali Sama Bar Chilkai, that he said that Akshiba Avu Debar Abuvram, that the father of the son of Abuvram, which Abuvram was the name of the person, but we're obviously referring to Abuvram himself. It's just that they always knew the son and not the father, so they called him on his son, but his son's name was always called Bar Abuvram, so they were calling the father of the son of Abuvram, but means himself, that he had asked, Ramilan, some say that Ahud Bar Abuvram, that it was the brother of Bar Abuvram, that he said, can you even say what you're trying to say to disprove Nachman Yitzchak by saying that, yeah, he's saying Daye because in regards to Gamliel, but it's stronger still than Nadir Rabban. He says, is that really possible? But Vatnan, you have to read the words in the Mishnah. The words in the Mishnah were, V'chacham Aymim, they said, not like Rabban Gamliel, you don't have to have both the hands and the feet that have a spasm. Actually, the farkas, oibiyat, oibiregel, it's enough to have a spasm either in the hand or the foot of the animal. Now, that says either the father or the brother of Baba Avram, Rabbanan ha'ahai kaimu. Where exactly, on whom is the Rabbanan coming to disagree? Ilema adrem umliel, if you say they're disagreeing with umliel, but then kivin shepirkus amibayale, the word shouldn't be until sounding, hey, it's not enough. You've got to do all the way up until you do that. But they're being more lenient during umliel. They should say, since you did pirkus on the yad regel, or yad regel, that would be enough. But that you don't need both. Say Elipshita Ad Rabbelaza. Obviously, they're going on Rabbelaza. Now, Ve'i Adav, and if you're trying to contest Rav Nachman Yitzchak saying that Rabbelaza of Zinuk is a stronger sign of Pirkus, Samayad, then why are the Rabban using the word until, which sounds like that the Rabban's Pirkus is being more stringent than what we mentioned up until now? And obviously, it's not more stringent than Leal. And if that of Rabbelaza is stronger, so why are the Rabban using the word Ad, which sounds like that it's stronger? They should have used the word Kivin. Rather, obviously, that it's even stronger than that of Rebbe Elazar. So obviously, Zinuk is a lesser sign of Pirkus, and even that it's the least sign of Pirkus, you still see, and that's Rav Nachman Yitzchak's proof, that it's enough, obviously, even Betchilas Shechita, and that's his proof that this Pirkus only has to be Betchilas Shechita, not like Rav Chisda says, has to be Be'emtza Shechita. Now the Gemara brings, as we had mentioned him in, just in passing before, Rav Amar, he says, Pirkus Shamar, this that we said in the Mishnah, you have to have Pirkus, is Be'sev Shechita. It means literally at the end of the slaughtering, meaning that after you finish Shechita, then it's spasmed, that is a sign of vitality after the slaughtering. But if not, even if it does it in the middle, or for sure even in the beginning, that then it's not going to be a valid pirkus. Now Amar Rav, it says, where do I know this from? It says, the Tanakh learned the Braisa. It's pasuk miYikra in Perichah Beis pasuk Chavzayin that says regarding what's valid as a carbon. It says Shoyrei Chesev, and the Brice is going to expound the words of this pasuk. So it says an ox or a lamb or aze or a gold kiyvali that will be born. Vayishivis yam tachzimayim, for the first 7 days they will be beneath its mother. And from the 8th day and on, Yeratza l'karban ish l'Hashem, it's valid to be as a willingness, as a carbon, as a sacrifice, a fire offering for Hashem. So the Brisa expounds, it says, Shire Nax, as we continue to Midbeis, Oichesef, or a lamb. Now, the word Oi tells us prat l'klaim, that if we have a mixed breed, a hybrid, where if you have the son of a female sheep with a goat, that child's invalid for a carbon. And then we know from the extra word Oi. Now, when it says oy eiz, or a goat, prat l'nidma, that excludes something that has the appearance. Meaning if it's a goat that was born from a goat like itself, but its child looks like a sheep, so it resembles a different type of an animal, that's also going to be invalid to be brought as a carbon. When the pasuk continues, ki yivol, when will be born, that's prat l'yetzer d'ofen. That excludes if the animal was born through Caesarean, where they tore out and ripped it out from the mother animal, which sometimes it dies and sometimes it's alive, but it wasn't born through the birth canal, so therefore, that, and it wasn't born naturally, so that's excluded from being brought as a carbon. When it says that it's shivas yam, 7 days, that's prat l'machus hazman, that excludes if it wasn't yet 7 days old, even if its mother is alive, you can't bring that child, that baby animal, as a carbon. And it says it was 7 days tachas imoy, beneath its mother, which sounds like even for one moment, but that the mother was alive. Prat liyasim, that excludes if the animal was orphaned, that its mother was not alive, that then it's not going to be valid as a karma. Now, on this last halacha, says Rava, hayasim hechadami. What is this case that we're excluding an orphan animal from being brought as a karma? Ilim ediyal dasei ime. If you're going to say that the mother gave birth to it, v'hadr, and then after a moment, then mesa, then the mother died. And that says Rava, lo'ilim techi betezel. What, you think that the animal, the mother, has to live forever? What do you mean? As long as the mother was alive for one moment, you already called it tachas imoy. As Rashi explains, you can't say, as one would think to say if you would read the pasuk, that the pasuk is telling us, what do you mean? The mother has to live for 7 days. It's because it says if the child was born and it was under its mother for 7 days, then on the 8th day and on, you could bring it as a carbon. Says Rashi, no, because as the Brisa teaches in Taras Kayanim, basically says, what does it teach in this pasuk when it says tachas imoy? The reason is because it says that it has to be, or it cannot be brought yet for a period of 7 days. Now, there's another pasuk that says that with its mother. Now, you would think it has to be with its mother for 7 days. That's what the pasuk that we're bringing in Vayikra says tachas imoy. No, it tachas also means it's in place of the mother. So the mother doesn't have to be there. Now, if you had tachas imoy, you would think, okay, that even if, let's say, it was born when the mother was dead, that would also be valid as a karma. That's what the other pasuk says, im imoy, has to be with the mother, which sounds like both of them have to be in the world at the same time, that it should be called its mother. So how do you understand it? So that's what basically says in that price, that if the mother was alive, at least for one moment, so that's going to be considered validity, that it's not considered a yasim. Because Rabbi Yisrael understands that, as we said, tachas imoy, that means like in the place of its mother. The mother dies, and the child takes its place. So that's why we can't say that it means to say that it has to be alive for all 7 days, because it says tachas imoy, where it's in place of the mother. But again, it can't be that it was only taking the place of the mother, because it also says another pasuk, im imoy. So what's the case talking about? As our Gemara is illustrating this, if you're saying that the mother was alive for one moment, then died, so that should be valid enough for like that to resolve the im imoy with the tachas imoy. It has both. It takes the place, so therefore it doesn't have to be alive for all 7 days, but yet it was with imoy for one moment. So why would that be the problem, what we're excluding of being considered a yasim? Ella rather, says Rava, must be de mesa b'hadi yaldase. Okay, what are you going to say? That the mother first died, and then the child, the baby, the animal was born. Now, the problem is that's really a yetzer d'ofen. That's cesarean, because the child's not being born naturally because the mother died. Rather, they have to tear open the animal and get the child out. Whether the mother's alive or dead, that's still considered cesarean. So, mechi yivalid nafka. We already know that excluded from the other part of the pasuk. It says, ki yivalid, that if it's only naturally born and not if it's taken out through cesarean. So, ela pshita, rather, says Rav, it's obvious, and this is his proof, that we're talking about a case where the mother is pirush lamisa, that at the time of birth, the mother goes to death, B'zeh pirush l'chayim. And the child goes to life. In other words, at the time that it died, that's the moment it gave birth through the womb, through the birth canal. And that's what the pasuk is telling you, that no, that's not enough. That you need to have the mother live until over the conclusion of the birth, that it lives a little bit after the birth. And if not, that's considered yasim, because obviously that it says in the pasuk tachasimoy is excluding that if it was alive in the middle of the birth, but it died at the conclusion of the birth, as Rava explains. It says, if you're going to say, like I'm trying to say, that when it says that it was alive at the end of the birth, it means a little bit after the birth it was still alive, that it was totally alive when it was coming out, and it's excluding and saying what's going to be considered a yasim, that the moment the birth ended, the mother died, it wasn't alive a little bit after the birth. You could understand, that's why you need a pasuk to exclude this case of what we're calling a yasim, that's not excluded from the case of kiyavalid, that when it dies at the end of the birth, which we said excludes yetzer daifen, because here it wasn't a yetzer daifen. It wasn't born through cesarean. The mother actually gave birth to it. It only died at the end of the birth. But again, it wasn't alive a little bit after it gave birth, so that's not considered tachas imoy, but it's still not considered ki yevaled of being excluded cesarean. But if you hold that you don't need it to be alive a little bit after the end of the birth, and the pasuk would then be excluding if the mother died in the middle of the childbirth, in the middle of the birth of the baby animal, then la malay, saying, what do you need a pasuk for? Michi yevaled nafka, that's already excluded from the case of ki yevaled, because that would still be considered cesarean, where it didn't totally give birth to the child, and you have to get it out through cesarean. Rather, this is Rava's proof. Obviously, whatever it is where the rabbis require that there is some vitality, some life, you need to have it there totally at the end of that thing, of that situation, and a little bit more, that's the same thing, of the Shechita, that Rav is proving, that just like you see over here, for the mother to have been considered alive in the birth, has to be a little bit more after, so to be a Shechita, the Pirkus has to be, to show that it was alive during the Shechita, a little bit after, and that's why he said it has to be B'soiv Shechita, it's not enough, for sure not in the beginning of Shechita, not even B'emtza Shechita. Continuing on these halachas, a Pirkus, Amar Rav, he says, the halacha in this topic of the machlekes of our Mishnah, of what we're talking about Pirkus, is like the following brisa. The brisa says, behema daka, small livestock, shepshata yada b'lechzira, if it only did that at the shechita, that it stretched out a hand and didn't take it back, psula, that's invalid, again, if it's a mesukenes, because that's normally what an animal does when it's dying and it's not a sign of vitality. But b'medvamun, when do we say this? Is b'yad, if all it was with the hand. A beregel, but if it's with the foot, then the hind leg, then bein pshata of like fafa, then whether if it stretched it out and didn't take it back, or bein kfafa of like pshata, or whether it bent it back and didn't stretch it out, ksher, that is going to be valid. That's not normally what an animal does when it's dying. That's only in the foreleg, but in the hind leg, that's going to be a sign of pirkus. And moreover, when do we say this whole halacha is bedaka, by small livestock, of bagasa, but by large animals, that's not normal for it to even just stretch out, and it's a sign of vitality, then bein biyad, bein beregel, whether it's with the foot or even with the hand, bein pshata v'le kfafo, or even if it's just stretching out and not taking back, bein kfafo v'le pshata, or if it stretches back and doesn't stretch out, kesher, that's going to be valid. Now, regarding a bird, a filalei rafrif, this terminology of rafrif is even less than kishkush of wagging, it's like a fluttering. If only it does is flutter elagapi its wing, v'le kishkush elaznavi, if only wags its tail, how is a pirkus for a bird, that's even enough of a pirkus. That's what Rabbi said, the halacha is like this brisa. And that is the Gemara, my kamash milan. What is he teaching us? Kulu tanini. In other words, what does Rabbi have to tell us? Oh, the halacha is like that brisa. That's the anonymous Mishnah that we have. That's halacha of our Mishnah. The Mishnah had said, behem adaka, the small livestock, shepshato yadav lechzir, and this was after the homachlekes, it seems like everyone agrees to this halacha, if it stretches out his hand and doesn't take it back, said the Mishnah psula, that's invalid. That's just the leaving of the soul. It's not a sign of vitality to show it's a valid pirkus. So you know this halacha, which the Brisa said. Additionally, you know the inferential halachas of this Mishnah, where it's telling us, yadin. When's it not enough if it just stretched out? By the hand. But regaloi, that's not a problem by the foot. The other halacha of the Brisa. More of a dakin. You see that it's only talking about small livestock. That's not enough stretching out the hand. But gasolai, but not by large animals. That would be enough of stretching out the hand. So you see all the halachas of this brisa and that Mishnah. Why does he have to come to that brisa? Says the Gemara, if Israchale, what was necessary from the Braisa is the case of the bird, the Leitanam, which wasn't said in that Mishnah, and that's what he's pointing out from the Braisa, that Allah is like that. Regarding the bird, all it has to do is flutter, because it's such a that for the bird to show vitality, it's enough for just to do that fluttering of the wing or the wagging of its tail. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, and continuing the theme of the word opening of these Mishnahis, like that of our parak of Hasheichet, regarding the laws of slaughter. Hasheichet la'ivik achav, if a Jew slaughters an animal for an idol worshipper, for a non-Jew, so shchitasik shere, it's a valid slaughter, it's kosher. Now, v'rbeliaza paisel, Leaz, however, says it's invalid. Why? Since this animal is owned by the idol worshipper, although the Jew is slaughtering it, the thought process of the non-Jew could take effect on the slaughtering of the Jew. And generally, we assume that the thought process of a non-Jew, of the idol worshipper, is for his idol, for idolatry. And therefore, that's just like we know generally, if someone slaughters for idolatry, it makes it invalid. This will also take effect, even though the Jew is slaughtering it. Now, Amr Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Eliezer says, moreover, if let's say actually the Jew that's slaughtering the animal is actually taking all the meat, all he's giving to the idol worshipper is just the diaphragm, that the muscle on the bottom of the stomach, that's what he's giving to the idol worshipper, already psula would already make it invalid. Why? Because since the non-Jew has a portion in this animal, so he's somewhat of a partner, and since he's the bailim, on at least part of it, as we'll see in the Gemara, although he's not the one slaughtering it, his thought process could affect the animal. And we assume that generally the thought process of the non-Jew is for the idolatry, which makes this slaughtering invalid. Now, Amr Bisi, he disagrees. Says Kavochem Mahadvarm. It says there's a Kavochem over here that the thought process of the owner, the non-Jew, will not take effect since it's the Jew who's slaughtering it. Because Umab Makam Shamach Shava Peselis, if in a area where a thought could invalidate an animal. Where do we find that? B'mukdashin, by karbanis, like the pasuk says in Mikra Zayin, says lo yachashiv, which literally means it won't be considered, but we read it lo yachshiv, that you're not allowed to have a machshava, which is to eat the animal on the third day, which is chutz lazmanei, because then it's going to be pigel, as the Gemara explains in Zvachim Chavtesim Abeis, where we find that the thought process can make an animal pigel, it could invalidate an animal of shchita, and still over there in hakol hoylech elacha ha'ivid, and whose thought process does go ahead and affect it negatively. That's only that of the one who's doing the avodah, who's doing the slaughtering, as the pasuk says, hamakiv lo yichashiv. It's the one who's doing the avodah, the one who's being makivit. But the owners, they don't invalidate with their thought process when the kohen's doing the avodah. So makom she'imach shavah pesel, so in the place where thought process does not invalidate an animal, where do we find that? By chulin, by mundane, unconsecrated animals, which the Gemara is going to explain what is he talking about. The machshava of Avodah Zarah does invalidate because it's called Zivchi Mesim, which tells us just like a mess is forbidden to have benefit, so to something that's sacrificed for Avodah Zarah is Asabana. But the Gemara will address that, but that's what the Mishnah is saying. But by Chulin are things that a thought process does not invalidate. So in a din shlo yehei hakol hoylech elacha ha-sheichet, so for sure over there, which is a less severe halacha, for sure if anything is going to invalidate, it's only going to be the one who's doing the slaughtering and not the owner. Because by Kachim, where Machshava is a bona fide halacha, the only one that validates is the one who's doing the avodah, not the owner, for sure over here. So therefore it's going to be a valid shchita because it's the Jew who's doing the slaughtering and he does not have a Machshava for avodah zarah. Now the Gemara explains the three different opinions in our Mishnah, that of the Chachamim, the Tanakama, and that of Rabbi Eliezer, and then that of Rabbi Yisi. So the Gemara explains, Hani Tanoi, the first two Tanoim, the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer, Islehud Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yisi. They hold of the following halacha of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yisi, which what the Gemara is coming to tell us, is that the reason that the Tanakama says that it's kosher when a Jew slaughters for a non-Jew, is not because that we say that the machshava of the non-Jew is not going to be effective. No, because if that would be what he's saying, then he's saying the same thing as the third opinion of that of Rabbi Yisi. Rather, the Gemara comes to explain that the Tanakama holds like Rabbi Elezer and Rabbi Yisi. But, so what do they dispute? So that's what the Gemara is going to explain. The Tanakama, we learn the Braisa. Amar Rabbi Elezer and Rabbi Yisi. He says, Shemati, I heard from my teachers, Shabbai lemefaglin, that owners, not only the kohen is doing the avodah, the owner of the carbon could also make it a machshavas pigel if he's thinking he wants to eat it beyond its time after 3 days. Which the reason of his opinion is explained in Masechet Zvachim at the end of Perek Bishamid of Menzayin Med Aleph, because there's a pasuk that says Vehikriv Hamakriv. Now that is the context of the owner bringing it, and we see he's called the Makriv. So then he's included in Hamakriv Lo Yechashiv, which is if he has a machshava when the kohen is slaughtering or throwing the blood, and the owner's thinking, I want to eat it chutz zmani, that will go ahead and take effect and make it into pigel. So says the Gemara, both the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer agree to this halacha, the Baal Mamafagel. But Miyu, however, Tanakama, the first Tana of our Mishnah that says in the halacha of the Jew slaughtering for the non-Jew, it's going to be kosher. Savor, he holds, Ishamane, if we hear the idol worshiper Dichashiv, that he's having this thought on the slaughtering of the Jew, and he's saying that this, that the Jew is slaughtering the animal for me, I want it to go for idolatry, yes, that's where we're there. We're going to say that it's going to be forbidden. Where there, the thought of the owner is going to be effective, like Rabbi Elazar ben Yossi says. But Eloi, but if we don't hear him saying and thinking that he wants to have it for Avodah Zarah, then Eloi, that's not going to be a problem, which is like the case of our Mishnah, which we don't hear him necessarily saying it, because Stamach Sheves Eivik Kacham Lavitzik Kacham Loi Amrin, and we don't say that generally we assume that any thought process about a non-Jew is for idolatry. We don't assume that, and therefore it's going to be kosher. But Rabbi Eliezer held that no, Avagav Deloi Shemani Dechashev, even though we don't hear him thinking this, Stamach Sheves Eivik Kacham Lavitzik Kacham Amrin, we say, we assume that generally the thought process about idol worship is for idolatry, and therefore it's going to be forbidden. On that, that's Rabbi Yossi came to say the third opinion of Mishnah, then no, Avagav de Shemini de Chashiv, even if we hear him thinking that he's saying he wants a Avodah Zarah, Zemechashiv, Zeh Oivid, Loim Rinan. We don't say that one person could do the Avodah and the other one could have a thought and invalidate the one who's doing the Avodah. Now, the reason why I use the word Zeh Oivid is because he's coming to refer even to the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Even by a carbon, Rabbi Yisi holds that no, the Bailam cannot be mefagel, which Rabbi Yisi comes to disagree with the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer. That's one version of their machlekes. Ikadami, that those that say that no, even b'dishamani, even when we hear the non-Jew, the chashiv, that he's thinking and he's saying he wants a avodah zarah, still pligi, still over there, the Rabban disagree with Rabbi Eliezer, and they would disagree. Even though they both hold of Rabbi Yisi's halacha, that Bailam can be mefagel with the carbon, but that's different than the case over here by a chulin animal in regards to avodah zarah. And that is Tanakama, Sava Tanakama holds, Ki amrinan ze mechashav ze oivid. Yeah, I agree to Rabbi Yossi's halacha, says the Tanakama. But when do we say that one person could be having the thought and the other one could be doing the act of the slaughtering and still it's going to validate? That's hanemi lebifnim. That's inside the azar in the Beis HaMikdash. Abachutz lai. But outside the azar, by chulin animals, they we don't say ze mechashav ze oivid. Why? Because chutz, that which is done outside the azar, meaning the thought process of a non-Jew for idolatry regarding a chulin animal, mipnim, from machshav of pigel by a carbon that's done in the azar, as a contained type of lam tesam and aleph, lo yafinan, we don't learn that out from that to say that the owner could make it forbidden. Rather, like the pasuk says in Tilim, zivchei mason, which is the halacha which we know that having it slaughtered for avodah zarah is forbidden, but it's only the zivche, when the actor who's slaughtering it for idolatry, that would make it awesome, but not the owner's thought process. Because bithnim, regarding pigel, that we said the pasuk says v'hikrav ha-makrav, which we see the Bible called the makrav, but we don't find that the owner is considered the makrav regarding, let's say, by avodah zarah. So therefore, that's where he disagrees and says, we're not going to say the halacha of zeh mechashav zeh oivid. On that, Rabbi Eliezer came to disagree, and he says, "No, yafina chutz mipnim. We learn out the halacha of outside from inside, from a mamatzina. From we compare that the owner could invalidate it by the machshava of a avodah zarah, even by chulin, even if someone else is slaughtering it, which we find just like over there. We say it, so to over here, we'd say you say it, which is what mamatzina means. And additionally, Rabbi Eliezer holds that by a avodah zarah, by a non-Jew, we assume that the regular machshava of a non-Jew for the idol worshipper is for idolatry, and therefore it's going to be aser in any case that a Jew slaughters for a non-Jew. On that, Rabbi Yisrael came to say that no, he disagrees with the whole premise, as even in the Azar itself, by Karbanus, for having one person, the owner, thinking, and the Kohen who's doing the Avodah, that it should make it forbidden, that you don't say, because he holds that this, as it says in the pasuk, Hamakav lo yichashiv, means literally the one who's doing the hakrav, or the one who's doing the avodah, and we don't say that it means the owner who also we see the word makrav is used by him. No, in this context, it definitely means the one who's doing the avodah. That would be the second version of the machlekes of the three machlekes in our Mishnah regarding the non-Jew's thought process relating to the Jewish person who's slaughtering, which again relates back to the halacha. A, in general, do you even say zemechashav zeh? And additionally, do you say that only by what's bifnim, regarding pigel by kachem by karbanos, or would you even say it by bachutz? And additionally, is that only when you hear him say that, or would that even be when you don't hear him, and that we would say stam avodas kacham, levitz kacham, that generally assume that his thought process is for idolatry and thus making it forbidden?